Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3. Hello and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm Darren Moser, stranded here with my fellow Trekkies Daniel Prue and Philip Gilfus. Gentlemen, there's new Trek this week, but what have you been doing to celebrate the joys of Trek? Philip, have you started a new rewatch? Have you started a new rewatch of Disco? Yeah.
Because we're not doing that. We're not calling it that.
It's never too early rewatch.
That's what I missed last week, guys. I was exploring the planet, and did you know we have a club here? I mean, like, it's totally dead. There's no one there, but still. So I was playing with the lights, you know, found some glow sticks, which I know we should be using to get rescued, but I was just spinning them around instead, so it was pretty cool. So, you know, guys...
The light switch is for turning the lights on and off, not for light switch raves.
Oh, come on. I mean, I was playing all my classic, dance music.
Darren, are we not going to just, like, is this a Commander McDuff situation where this guy wasn't here last week and he just shows up and we're just supposed to pretend like he was always here?
I'm the executive co-host, Daniel. I've been that the whole time.
All right, sorry. We missed you last week, Philip, and it's good to have you back anyways.
We did.
Well, I've been drinking a lot of water.
We miss you. I mean, that you're not there for us to miss. I mean, yes, it was sad.
Darren, you're not good at small talk.
No. I'm not.
He doesn't understand it.
Daniel, what about you? Have you been enjoying Trek in your corner of the planet?
Oh, sir, my corner of the planet.
Have you got?
We divided it into equal thirds, okay? Just because yours is 80% water, it's not my fault.
Oh, so I'm like the poor man's Khan. I don't get the good part of the planet or anything.
I would say Aquaman, but if you want to go
I don't
want to
be Aquaman, no way. Oh, man. Okay. I guess it's going okay. It's going great. We're getting new Star Trek every week. I have nothing to complain about. So
I'm looking for, cuz for some reason I thought it was going to happen this weekend, but I think I'm a month off, but I am looking forward to the first comic, you know, Star Trek Discovery comic issue.
Yes.
So that's, I guess, but I think it's a month from now. So
wait, when does that take place?
I think a month from now.
We'll be here all night, folks.
That's right.
All right. Well, and jumping through time, 30 minutes at a time, we have joining us today to talk about magic to make the sanest man go mad, Tristan Riddell. Welcome to City Alpha 3.
It is so good to be here. It is so good to see you guys again. And it is a pleasure to talk Star Trek, as always.
Do you have the magic in you, Tristan?
It's never left me.
Okay. Oh, good answer.
That's right. And also, you have a recent rebranding of Punch It Now, Punch It Writing in Star Trek.
That's right. Yes, I do. I do. I do. Like, yes, me and Charlene Schmidt, we originally, it was Punch It Writing in Pop Culture. And it's just, you know, like, we saw you guys every single week talking about Star Trek. And we're just like, listen, they're hogging it for the entire network. And we just can't let this stand. And so we're going to take a piece of the pie. And that is what we're doing now. And we're having lots and lots of fun with it. So everybody should check it out by going to thenerdparty.com/punchit.
Well, as we know, Star Trek is lots and lots of fun. I mean, there's parties, there's time travel. It's nothing
but beer pong.
Fun.
There
it's
is
so
beer
much
pong.
Fun.
Yes, there is.
And
yes,
I just
yes.
can't stand it.
You know,
it's so much
I've
fun.
Been to a lot of Star Trek parties. You know, whether it's been a good Prixen celebration, you
a
know,
concert or five.
Yeah, yeah, or a concert, maybe even, you know, some tango. But I've never been to a frat party in space before, and so it was different. Yeah.
Cough, get off my lawn. Cough.
Well, I mean, that would be a good place to start because it is the beginning of the episode.
It's also the next 20 minutes and then the next 10 minutes after that.
It's also in the middle and in the end. I mean, I liked how we came in from the outside and we could tell that's the deck. That's the party deck
because
you could see the lights from the outside. Now, I want to now remember, I've already taught you guys about red and green lights on the outside of starships.
Yes.
But this is nothing to do with navigation. Absolutely nothing. except for the Spore Drive core was there. But I guess that's
now. I'm almost picturing like another ship, like a little bit away from the Discovery, and they're looking through their windows and seeing like the flashing things going out, and they're like, "I feel like we should call the police." And you know, I don't know.
I'm picturing the Titanic and Carpathia where they're like, oh, they're just having a party. Oh, they're totally fine. Nothing's bad is happening over there. Let's just keep on going.
What I'm thinking is if there were any light-based life forms nearby, it might be like, you know, giving them the thumbs up or maybe another finger. I don't know. Things seems like classic Star Trek would have had that storyline. Like, oh, man, our lights were going all weird. And then these crazy aliens showed up. But no, I think it's cool. I think it's really cool.
See, I was going to ask you, Daniel, because all three of us are married, and we don't know what a club is. So, Daniel, would you go to the party deck?
I don't think I've ever been to a club, so you just can't assume that because I'm not married. But
to a discotheque?
I would go to the party. I've been to parties like the one on the Discovery there, and that seems completely appropriate to me if we kind of grant that it's allowed in that organization. Maybe this is where we'll disagree and of course this isn't the D, right? These aren't civilians. These are all people enlisted in Starfleet. I don't know. Are you telling me that there are no disco parties on the actual Enterprise? Well, that's been decommissioned, but you know what I'm saying? Any of I'm sure there's gotta be things going on in those ships, man. They get bored. What else are they going to do? I guarantee you that those people on those ships play beer pong. I can guarantee it.
I think they're allowed to have beer on ships.
I'm kind of with you, Daniel. Where it's we were all kind of discussing this offline, but it's true because you know on the D you had concert after concert after concert after concert of classical music, and then on Voyager you had things get a little bit looser with Neelix and like 50s night and Prixen and everything
movie
like
night.
That and like you're looking at like on Discovery and Voyager and the Enterprise you had anywhere from 150 to 300 people, but on the D you had 1,000 people. There had to have been some subsection who was like, you know what, screw this long hair music. We have to find some way to let loose.
42 decks. We can find some place.
Now, can you picture the party deck on the Enterprise?
Well, the thing is, it would just be the holodeck.
No. The Enterprise of this time.
Oh. Well, they had a bowling alley.
Right. Well,
and
they did similar.
Have a bowling alley.
And don't tell me, Philip, that you don't.
Cosmic bowling.
They had cosmic bowling, of course. Yes.
Right to self.
A cosmic bowling pizza party. That is exactly what the
That's right. I can see, you know, Spock would like bowling because there's some, you know, geometry and physics and all that. So, you know, the attraction would be there. So
Sulu would kick off the inertial dampers for half a second to aid in his strike.
Oh, man. Imagine, like, if you could have, like, low gravity parties and that would, like, totally mess with your beer pong. It would be wild. You could do a lot of fun stuff on those ships.
Talk about the sweet spot. it just seems... And I know this is going to be stupid, but I'm going to say it anyway. And we're kind of talking about it. Like, it's a very young party. Like, there's no one the age of 40 in that party room. You know, it's sort of like, and I think the Discovery crew is more or less a young crew. It's not like, you know, TNG or Deep Space Nine where you see, like, the 60-year-old ensign or something.
The old people, they put on the Baran. They're, you know, they're, oh, wait, never mind. Too soon.
They're already in bed.
That's true. You're right, Tristan. That is true. But I did notice every senior officer except for the tactical officer was on the bridge. So I guess he got special dispensation to be. Maybe you know what he did? And this happens all the time in the Army. He got tagged with being party officer in charge, OIC. So, you know, it's his job to organize the party as the newbie. He always gives that to the newbie.
He did give the toast. I mean, he kind of was taking charge of that party.
Yeah.
One thing that I wanted to see was like the effects of alcohol. And what they would do, like, if there was an emergency, what do you do? Because Synthahol isn't around yet. And so I really wanted to see, like, as they were leaving the room, like, they get, like, a hit of a hypo spray or something like that. And they, or yeah, just like a breath freshener or something like that. And they just kind of shake off the effects and go, like, whew, sober.
Or they have a special field in that room. It's called the Wasted Zone, and everybody that goes in is just automatically intoxicated. It's perfect. Nothing could go wrong with something like that. It would work very well.
Everything's rounded, nothing's sharp. You know, you're just
everybody's having a good time, you know, nobody's getting crazy, so it works.
Also, and this is just a follow-up question, but I'll ask it anyway. I noticed when I was in the previous episode and in this episode, the use of the word soldier, which I know seems like, well, why not? But like the last episode, or maybe it was two episodes, I guess it was two episodes ago, when Ash and Lorca were escaping the prison ship, and, you know, the captain's like, on your feet, soldier, you know, as if to buck him up. And then in this one, Tilly says she's going through a soldier phase. Not a Starfleet phase, not a tactical officer, but a soldier. And I just feel like, and I know we're in war, but to me that's an unusual word for the Star Trek universe. Or
for Star Trek, yeah.
I was going to say, I don't know if you know this. I don't know if Lorca's told you this or not, but we're at war.
We have to win the war.
The war,
war
is going very badly for us right
Look,
now.
I just look at this party and think there's a better way to spend 50 minutes than going to this party.
So. Although I can totally see, like, if Stamets is getting, you know, really out of it, and then we're all like, okay, guys, let's get drunk and turn on the spore drive. What is that going to be like? And they're all like, spore drive, spore drive, spore drive, spore drive.
That's awesome. Is it so, like, instead of like you know, doing a keg stand, he's like, he's doing it while attaching the you know, needles to his chest to power the spore drive.
Yeah, he has his arm patch up, and he's like, do you want to see it? Do you want to see it?
Yeah.
Who wants to go and do a black hole? Woo! Yeah.
And that's
how close can we get to that sun? Yeah,
and now we know what happened to the USS Crossfield.
And I have one last question, something I was thinking about today. And this is kind of related, but kind of not. With Michael Burnham. So she's now called Specialist, which I think is not really a rank. It's just something to call her, you know, Science Specialist, Michael Burnham.
She doesn't have a badge. So.
She doesn't deserve
a badge, no rank.
So here's a question. Is she a civilian, or is she in Starfleet?
She's an observer. All right. I mean,
observer.
Hell,
she'd be she's the best xenoanthropologist.
That's a good question.
She's a convict.
Wait. Well, no. Well, she got discharged, obviously, right? And
yeah, she's not in Star. Well, you say obviously.
Well, no,
but
no,
she's
no,
in
no.
Starfleet obvious prison. About.
And in this episode, Mud,
where's her ankle bracelet?
Mud couldn't find her on the manifest, the crew manifest. So, I guess.
Or I think he did, but it didn't.
No,
like,
he specifically says,
you're
a nobody.
He said nobody.
Officer manifest. So
he
by
said,
the way, if you're enlisted, don't matter to Mud.
So he wouldn't know who Tilly was either.
This would be like a wartime conscription or like a wartime commission, right? Like a non-officer wartime commission.
Well, I don't know what that means. I mean, I'm not trying to be.
Philip, I'm just throwing out words.
She's an officer person. Light up, do it to told ish.
Well, like, for instance, and we don't know, I guess we're assuming that's Stamets's background. Like, that he's not, I mean, we're assuming that he's not a Starfleet Academy graduate. He's just Joe Scientist that got conscripted and made a lieutenant or something.
Excuse
like
me, he's just Joe Scientist. They designed the ship around his drive, Philip. So maybe you should get his name right.
Which to the point. So they designed this ship for my specifications. So he said, we need a party room right here.
Now,
you got to put it.
I would say that doesn't make sense knowing sort of the Stamets we know from the first episode, but the Stamets we know now, and considering that he now exists outside of time, retroactively, then designs the party deck. See?
I like that.
Yeah. Everything that happens now is because Stamets did it before. It's kind of like the end of Bill and Ted, where they kept going back in time when they were fighting.
Excellent to each other, guys.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Remember when they had to go, it's like, well, I went back in time. I would have moved that. Well, if I went back in time. And that's basically what's happened.
Bill, remember, keys. Okay. Trash can. Okay.
And by the way, Ash is really tall. Like, just watching it the second time, either Michael is short and he's tall, or both are true.
I think Saru is probably the only person taller than him.
Yeah. I thought you were making a joke because Stamets actually says that line in the episode.
But it's true. Like, he's got like a head on her. But anyway.
He's 6'1".
No, that's not bad at all. She
so
must be short.
Sized. Yeah.
So we have the return of Harry Mudd. He's back, and he's back in a space whale. Because that's how you sneak on board.
In a bug uniform.
The USS Discovery.
Yeah, well, that was awesome. What was that? Like blue, like space blue beetle? That was super cool.
Oh, yeah. That was
I think he's a DJ. He's
he was coming for the party.
Guys, I'm ready to start this
party. He's starting Flaven Mouse.
Okay, we're getting a little too Rick and Morty for my taste. Like, this is really heading into that territory.
That's awesome. I loved his costume. Because... because this is something you never seen. Well, Star Trek. Well, I guess you kind of see stuff like that. But it was obviously designed to throw people off. Like as long as you didn't
bug person, we got a bug person.
Yeah, as long as you didn't see next week on Star Trek Discovery last week, you wouldn't know that this was mud. And I thought that was really cool. And I guess maybe you probably need to like have a suit to live inside of a big giant Garga Glufin Claffin.
Right when I saw it, I was thinking, I was just like, what a handsome race.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, I think we're all movie people, but Tristan and Darren, I know you're big movie people, but like of all the heist movies, since like Mud's, a robber, is that like just one of the
Trojan horses is way right in.
In the heist, you know, you wear your, instead of like the presidential mask.
Like the Nixon mask, yes. Or, yeah.
We actually should talk about that because that's super cool. It's stated that he steals from the super high-tech Beta Z bank. And I'm like, even if you have infinite retries, how do you stop people from reading your mind? That is so cool.
You
like,
wear your
maybe the
mask.
Helmet. You wear your helmet, yeah.
It's like Magneto's mask for Beta Z. That's
yes.
Cool. Yeah, it actually probably could. That's actually, I didn't make the connection of the Beta Zoid because it's like, oh, it's a bank and we know that planet. I totally forgot the fact that they can read minds. So that'd be really,
perhaps
really
the writers
hard.
Did as well.
No, it's well. No, I think it's actually supposed to make it seem impressive that he pulled this thing off, and it does sound impressive. And I think I would like to see that in
we'll
some
do
form.
It like the Betazoid job,
the Betazoid bank job. So I have a, and this is just a throwout question. When they're going to the shuttle bay, guys, we've seen the main shuttle bay. But anyway, I'm kidding. We've seen it before. But like,
I think they only have one shuttle bay.
I know. Right, but the Doctor in white, I presume. It seemed like when I watched it the second time that he had commander rank. Now I know Sexy Beard has a commander
rank
as well. I like but are we going to assume for the moment, or do you guys not want to buy this that's the CMO?
No.
Okay.
Not until it's explicitly told to us.
I'm crossing that off my list.
Wait, who is Sexy Beard?
Oh, Dr. Culver. Whatever.
Oh, okay.
We don't do names here, Tristan. We don't do names.
Okay.
Yeah. I liked when the space whale was beamed in, how the gravity, as it started to affect it, like the like kind of extremities went down. I'm like, okay, that totally makes sense. If you're a space-faring creature, you know, we got to sour the milk to get you out of here. So.
Okay. That also was a nice touch. Made me ponder a few things. One, if it is a space whale or Dormagonger or Gerrymander
Dormammu.
Or whatever it's called.
Dormammu, yeah.
Just like when you beam it into the shuttle bay full of oxygen that lives in space.
Pressure, yeah, all sorts of things. Lots of heat in there that it probably doesn't want to deal with.
But Philip, it's on the endangered species list. We cannot chat.
Which is a court-martialable offense if you do not. So we're talking.
Apparently,
I mean, you can blow up your entire crew. That's fine, but you run over a whale in Starfleet,
if you hear the distress call of a space whale, you have to stop and investigate it, or you forfeit all your shares with the company. I mean, never mind.
That was a deep cut.
Yeah. Oh, hey. So we got Harry Mudd, we got, and then I think big picture, the way they edited the time loop, I mean, because that is very difficult to do. Like, you have like cause and effect where you pretty much almost play the entire loop and then, you know, all hands banish ship and you jump back. This, it definitely started to, let's all shake around in our chairs. This had more of the, you know, almost Groundhog's Day quick cut where it's like you see Mud walk in several times. And that's, you know, it's difficult to communicate that to someone if they're not like, I would assume like a deep sci-fi person. Like, you're watching multiple cuts, but we're not going to show you the entire thing. We're going to show you just him walking in. And it was very much Next. Did anyone ever watch that Nick Cage movie?
Nobody watched Next.
I know. It was actually not that bad, but
no. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's basically where he can see forward into the future, and so he and basically very similar. It's like he's getting ultimate retries. So he's just like, I'm gonna step over to the side, and I know you're gonna walk this way, and you're not gonna see me. And it although it's like cameras, sensors, none of that matters.
One thing that I loved how it was edited. Like, I like what you're talking about. Like, I love how that it was covered because it wasn't just the cause and effect where 1:1, 1:2, 1:3. But I love the editing. I hated the camera work because you could tell that the further that they went along, the director of photography just got bored and was like, okay, what do I do now to differentiate what we've seen before? And then the camera just started circling around, moving back and forth like it saw too many 1990s Michael Bay films. And it was just like, it was loose. It was, it just, it's, I started getting seasickness. It was insane. I felt like I was inside the whale.
Which, by the way, don't know what happened to that, the spaceship, the time crystal inside the, what, doesn't matter, stop asking questions. But
oh, you want to talk about time crystals? you want to talk about time crystals? Okay, that was probably like,
it's a quartz time crystal because it's obviously in his watch. So no, I'm just kidding.
That was every single episode of Star Trek Discovery, I've had at least one or two eye roll moments, and I've discussed it with each and every one of you.
I feel like we should call this the Elon Musk moment of the episode.
Yeah, I was like, this week's eye roll was, but like that one was definitely. I liked this episode. It was entertaining. I enjoyed it, but for some reason, just like when Burnham just out of nowhere said, time crystals. I was like, what the hell is a time crystal? And for me, a Star Trek fan, to stop paying attention and say out loud, what the hell is a time crystal? That is saying something. Like, throw in a chronoton and I'll be fine.
Well, yeah.
Chronoton crystal. That's way better.
Yeah, because I like how Ash, and I even forget what he said, like, all I remember, let me search my memory. He said something about an unstable blah, 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 blah. And she's like, ah, time crystal.
Time
like,
crystal. And then she goes on and she's like,
it is the fire in which we burn.
Yeah, and she goes on and she's like, oh, clearly this wasn't possible before, but it has now been perfected by fourth dimensional beings. I'm like, wait,
that's a bit of a jump there.
You are
Michael
making
Burnham.
A whole
that's
lot
a bit of
assumptions
a jump.
Like
there.
I saw her reading the script and then handing it back.
Enter the Tesseract. It's us.
But again,
it's us.
This is another, you know, it's another instance of Discovery though being a Lower Decks show. So, I mean, from the beginning where they're called to the bridge because they're not on the bridge. And when they get there, they don't know what's going on. And they're like, oh, it's a space whale. And it's, I mean, it's subtle.
It's a Geordi LaForge Mander. Or it's a Gorgi Gamora.
It's a Gorgonzola.
Yes.
But it...
The
fact that our characters don't necessarily know all the pieces, that's nice because they definitely play to that a lot. We're talking nitpicks at the end.
I think
where
that's actually the whole reason
for
this podcast, Aaron.
Well, okay,
we were going to call it "We're Talking Nitpicks,"
roll,
but we
roll
study
moments,
off of three.
I roll moments,
picking space nits.
I would say my eye roll is at the end when they kind of have their plan that's going to make Mudge
Jinkies.
Just kind of go with it. He kind of goes with it a little too easy. I would do like one more loop just to be sure, but that's just me.
But it wouldn't do anything. I mean, if
like,
it wouldn't change anything though. I mean,
no, but he would know that they are kind of onto something.
Right, but if he like let's just say as soon as they said, "Hey Mud, here's the ship." And he goes, I think you're tricking me. Let me hit this loop again. Nothing would have changed because he hadn't changed anything at that point.
Oh,
it would have
man.
Been the exact same loop. So he really only had the option to go
true.
Along with it. And he also still had all the power. So even if this thing goes south, he thinks, all I have to do is hit the bleep bloops on my time crystal, and I'm good to go. So it's no big deal.
Bleep bloops? How dare you, sir? How dare you bring that language into the show?
I mean, well, you know what and I don't know. I don't want to go on a rant here. What he should have done if he kept to the character that was established in this episode is he should have shot Lorca.
I was actually very
how
surprised.
How convenient mm-hmm. in this last one where he's like killed 100 people. because, I mean, the reason that I know everyone watched the episode.
I don't think he's killed anybody in the last loop.
I know, but
he
I'm
didn't.
Saying how convenient, you know. After
well,
killing hundreds of people in every single other one. And then because the reason that... Stamets, you know, finally gives the game up, not in this one, but, you know, two loops ago or one loop ago, was that he literally says, I've seen you kill too many people. But now, hey, he didn't kill anyone this one. No harm, no foul. High five around. Mud's cool. That scamp. Noogie, noogie.
How did you guys feel about Michael killing herself? Like, did you guys see that coming? And also, you have to have a lot of faith in Stamets if you're going to start swallowing some dark matter, right?
But Tristan... Like, he told her secret.
That's true. Oh man,
not a moment's hesitation.
That's a whole. That's a whole.
It would have been like Janeway being told about the time she had to walk home from practice in the rain that one time from ballet practice.
I would have liked one scene of Berman debriefing Stamets, because again, remember, Berman is not the one who has the memory, and so I mean, it's just one of those little things that they kind of glossed over, which I understand for like time, but. It's like, okay, he's gotten her to talk to
Ash,
and so they know this information, and they're going to do this, but then it's like, then it's reset a couple of times, but we never see her talking to Stamets and saying, okay, this is what I tried, and this is what didn't work or did work. I don't know. I guess I felt like there was a little bit of a disconnect. It was almost as if Stamets and Michael were re-remembering. I know that's not the case, but that's kind of how they played it.
Yeah, because I think the thing that, and again, I like, because I don't feel like I haven't said anything good about this episode. I really do like the premise of the episode. I mean, you know, we kind of knew time loop. We kind of thought cause of effect. And I don't think it was, per se, like cause and effect. And like Tristan said, you know, it was kind of cut differently. And I like that whole, you know, time crystal aside. I do like the whole premise of the episode. That's fine. A little whatever. But yeah, it did seem, you know, especially when you have that, it's not weird, but when you have the weird dance scene with Stamets, which again, it's an odd character piece, which Discovery, I'm feeling, is going to be more character than, you know, which is fine. Well, that's not what I like, but anyway. But, you know, it was an odd moment of like, hey, ship's going to blow up, but let's dance for 5 seconds. Because she seemed to remember that moment, and I know she didn't really remember that moment, but she called back to that moment later. And so, like, you know, when Stamps is like, okay, this is the 8th time or the 20th time, by the way, you never love someone, also we dance, and when we dance I told you that you really should be yourself, and then really should have remembered, and then I really should write this thing down, and you know, and then like somehow she knew that in the last go around, and whatever, that's a nitpick, I know, but it did seem, I think if you watch this again and again, you're like, did Michael start learning stuff after a while?
Well, look, if Stamets doesn't get Michael and Ash together at the Enchantment Under the Sea dance, then Lorca is nice. Not going to be around, and he's going to just fade.
That's
out
a good
of
one. That's
away.
I like that. So Michael
Saru,
was going.
I'm late for school.
I would have loved it, and it would have been even more appropriate if Michael came out and played played on his on her guitar. You know, to
now I want Saru to say "Great Scott." That's all I need.
See,
that's all I need.
I see
good.
Saru more as the principal character. You're a little
Slacker.
Loud.
Michael, you never amounted to anything in this town.
Because I feel Stamets was playing the Doc Brown character.
Okay, let's talk about the relationship stuff. Cause
no, we got to recast the entire crew in Back to the Future right now.
Who's going
to
be Biff then?
Mud.
Mud.
Yeah, duh.
How hard is this? Sheesh.
Anyways, we're not actually going to really do this.
But we're out of time.
We'll talk about... Oh, come on. That was a good one.
Man.
I'll give you that one. The whole relationship stuff felt really juvenile to me. And I mean, I think it's half the point, but it comes across as like literally, especially, you know, with the younger people and the dancing and the... I mean, it just comes across as super...
High school.
Super high school. And it's like, I get it that she doesn't know how this kinds of stuff works, but it feels like they're passing notes in class, you know, through Stamets and stuff like this. And it's, and then, of course, like you mentioned, Phil, at the end, it's almost all for naught. Obviously, she still, I don't know, I guess she just learns that she learned a lesson, which isn't the same thing as actually learning the lesson. So we're there may be some sort of growth there, but I would imagine it would be pretty minuscule. I feel like it's just a little too early to do this. And
we only got like how many episodes left in the
season?
Well,
yeah, I don't. We don't need to do it this season is my point. We don't need to bring this. I don't know. It just feels like there's a lot of other things that we can be exploring at this point, and I don't know that this is...
Daniel, we don't explore. This is a war going on.
Well, there's a lot of things to
discover.
We
have to win the war, Daniel. Then. We have to win.
I have a larger question for you guys. How... This is kind of piggybacking on what Daniel was talking about. How do you guys feel about having your protagonist essentially be a Vulcan? Is that weird having such a stiff
But she's gotten way more
character?
Human.
I wish she was really...
Like, honestly.
I wish she... If she was going to be Vulcan, I wish she was really a Vulcan. It kind of annoys me that she was already like 4 or 5 when she... I mean, I know that it would obviously affect her life and stuff. It's... Obviously, she's more emotional than a Vulcan. would be, and that's, I think, for the benefit of the show. But it is weird. It just feels like she's cosplaying as a Vulcan the whole time. And to me, that's just like a weird place to be in. Like, you know, from the get-go, the way that she portrays it, it's like, oh yeah, she's doing a Vulcan without being a Vulcan. Maybe those weren't the right ways to say that. But and that's a little problematic to me.
I mean, I was going to say, I like Michael. And I'm saying, do I like Michael... just like as a conceptual character, or do I like the character Michael? And I think both are true. Anyway, because I think you can do those different. But I think I like Michael because I always find Vulcan is so hard. You know, and we can talk about all the Vulcan characters, and I think Spock is sort of in his own place, you know, because that's a half-human, half, not that she's, you know, fully human and a Vulcan, but you know, for all of Tuvok and all our other great Vulcan characters out there, and T'Pol, it's hard to play, and it's not always done well because Vulcans are hard to make interesting. And I know that's a blanket statement, but, you know, because it's hard. How do you, because it's only when you're not being Vulcan that you're interesting, right? You know, and it's a hard thing to, because if you're too emotional, then you're not being a Vulcan. And so I think I like Michael has that excuse of where she is kind of that outside in. And so anytime she sort of dips into emotional, you're like, well, she's a human. That's her excuse, you know. Which I think, you know, is always sort of the reverse Spock. You know, well, okay, he's being too Vulcan because he's trying to overcompensate. Or now, oh, a little emotion. He's, you know, half human. And I think with Michael, if she's too Vulcan, she's relying on how she was raised. If it's her human, then it's her instinct. So it works for me. It's almost like this is, since you're here, Tristan, and this may be a bad, you can tell me if this is a bad comparison, almost like a Seven. You know, how human, how bored.
Yeah. No, I don't think that's a bad comparison at all, because actually I was discussing this with my wife, aka the girl, earlier, and she actually raised that question to me. She said, like, how do you feel about having the protagonist practically be a Vulcan? And we raised the same concerns that all of you guys just did, and my counter was, well, what about Seven? You know, she was a human, but really Borg, so she was stiff, and she was unemotional, she was arrogant, but I feel like it was, but she, Seven was not our protagonist,
right?
Like, she wasn't the lead,
she?
Of the show.
I saw Season Seven, Tristan.
What's interesting,
I retract the statement.
what's really interesting to me, and I was thinking about this the other day, is Michael and Worf essentially have the exact same backstory, right? The only difference between the two characters is Worf clings to his people, whereas Michael accepts the culture of her adopters, and it's
Data.
What do you mean, Data?
That's Data.
Well, no, Data, I mean, Data was designed to want to be human, so that's a little different. I mean, Worf, I think the Worf thing is like exact, like these two young kids. Their parents were killed. They were adopted by a different culture. Worf decided to only really considered himself a Klingon. He wouldn't say he was any human. Whereas, you know, Michael seems to be like all Vulcan, even though she had a mother who was human, which still seems strange to me that she, a mother, an adopted mother. It seems weird that she's like really foreign to all these concepts when Amanda seems to be a very human, emotion-centric character. You think she would have been exposed to all of these sorts of things her entire life. I don't know why she's so Vulcan.
Well, the two Michael comments I want to make about relationships. One, and I don't know if this is a roll your eye moment or not. I'm interested in y'all's thoughts, but in the Amanda, the monster's name. But anyway, I like how when Michael was describing it, it's like, because it seemed like this kind of tangential, like, oh yes, the reason they're you know, so rare is because they don't have sex, because they're so concentrated on eating and they don't think about it. I'm like, is she talking about herself, or is that what is the reason for this? Is this a parallel? Why are we throwing this out here? Because I'm like, it's kind of weird that I don't know. And then the second thing, you know, when Tilly asked her about her former boyfriends, I mean, obviously, I say obviously, to what we know, Michael theoretically has been at Vulcan her whole life. I mean, you would think maybe she's gone to other planets growing up, but, you know, more or less. So I'm like, I wonder if Sarek, like, tried to have an arranged marriage. You know, like, what, in other words, what would be the, if all Vulcans, and I don't know this is true, but if all Vulcans have arranged marriages, did she have a potential for any relationships on Vulcan because everyone's sort of quote-unquote taken.
This has always bothered me about Sarek, by the way. He should be living on Earth. He is the ambassador to Earth. Shouldn't he always be living on Earth? I don't understand why. Like, they made this very clear very early on. He should be living on Earth all along.
Oh, man, you just, like, Daniel, you just totally just, like, burst this 30-year-old bubble that was floating above my head.
And he's never been shown. I mean, well, I guess he has in the movies, in the TOS movies.
He got stuck on Earth when the whale
stuck. Yeah. He should be there anyway.
He should have a home there. It should be no big deal.
It's his summer home, okay? Oh, sorry, winter home, because, you know, Vulcan.
Besides, I hear the Vulcan consulate in San Francisco is where the party's at.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I was actually just thinking, too, of the character from E2, who was the only other half-human, half-Vulcan that we know of, Trips, and to Paul's older son, you know, who grows up. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Everybody yeah, I know. Yeah.
I can't remember the guy's name.
I call it E-squared, but whatever.
Well, yeah, I guess it is E-squared, actually. I think you're right. Anyways, he played
the
a half-human, half-Vulcan.
Is a little higher in the corner.
And he played it. He played that character much more human than even Michael is at this point. So I feel like her humanity is lost in this whole thing. And I don't know if we need more backstory to fill that in or if it's an oversight by the writers or just the way that it's being performed. But I just feel like, I mean, now we're kind of getting these layers of, oh, she has these feelings and stuff like that. And which is good. It just feel like it just doesn't feel like there's enough humanity in there.
Daniel, this might be a very weak analogy, but think of it this way, and I'm not saying you should, I'm just throwing that out here. So when, say you have parents who are immigrants, say you have British parents, and you were born in the UK, but then they move to Los Angeles when you're really young, your parents will probably keep that accent longer, but you will adapt and get the American accent. And so I feel like the forces around Michael because she's surrounded by Vulcans, even though she is human and she has a human mother. Her adopted father is Vulcan. All of her friends are going to be Vulcan. All of her students, all of her classmates are Vulcan. All of her teachers are Vulcan. So she's surrounded by 99.9% Vulcan and 0.1% human. Even though that's her mother and she spends a lot of time with her, those outside forces have to be pretty strong. I mean, she straightened her hair just to fit in.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, that's right.
Well, think about you saying the E squared. That's the same thing where, yes, he had a Vulcan mother, but he lived on a ship that was entirely, you know, crewed by humans. So he was kind of the opposite. His entire group society was human. So, yeah, I would buy that he acted more human.
Well, I think he split the difference way better. I just what I'm saying is,
though, I have a question. Every 7 years, I don't think he mentioned a wife or anything.
Maybe it's 14 years if you're only half Vulcan.
Okay.
But
carry the two.
First of all, I would also, you know, just like to go back to my previous argument that Sarek as ambassador to Earth should be living on Earth, not Vulcan. But that's fine. We can overlook that because Star Trek.
Not an argument. We agree.
Because Star
you.
Trek does. Yeah.
Yeah,
but
no one's arguing.
No. I know. But other than that, what I would say to that is just that, like that character. God, I can't remember his name, but. He better than Spock and now better than Michael played like there was it's because it's like, with Spock for a good chunk of his time and for Michael now
Lorian was that his name
I can't remember they were right. At the extreme end of that, whereas it just feels like you could be 85% Vulcan, you could be, you know, 70% Vulcan, you don't have to be 100%. That's all I'm saying.
Just be the best Vulcan.
I don't know much about genetics, but I think it has to break down into quarters. Yeah, but that's just me.
You know what I'm like. You don't have to act 70%. That's right. What I mean. Yeah.
Right. I thought because this is random, but I still thought it was interesting. And Daniel, you're my expert on weird relationships. I liked Paul Stamets's meet cute for him and sexy beard.
because
whole time you're like, they don't make sense. Well, how are they together? They just snipe each other. I mean, that's the relationship. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's weird.
They're too honest.
Yeah. But yeah. And so, I mean, that's, they're the Tellarite couple, if you will, I guess. But,
I liked that little story. Yeah. I thought it was very endearing now, and,
but how does Hugh feel about the change in his partner?
I'm sure he seems to be very concerned, but obviously, and taking very good care of him, I'm sure they don't really, they know the cause of this, but they don't know where this is going to go. So, yeah. And obviously Lorca's pushing him at this point. I don't know. It's really weird. We're kind of downplaying the effects of, you know, him driving the ship at this point.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, very funny. He's on mushrooms. Get it? Get him? Like, I think he's dying. Yeah. If anyone wants to.
Well, and it, I mean, to tap a tiny bit into the preview of next week, it looks like Saru might be the catalyst, maybe. Yeah, well, in the upcoming.
They're not going to. Yeah. They're not going to. Yeah.
Well, because, and also this is just a thing. And I don't know if I've seen anyone mention it. So I noticed that Sexy Beard introduces him as his partner. Mm-hmm. So not boyfriend, not husband, but partner. I just thought that was an interesting choice of words. So.
Well, I guess they're not married then.
I'm maybe sure. What would translate the best, people would understand what he meant.
Mm-hmm.
There were also two women.
Oh yeah, the party.
In a relationship in the party. Yeah.
I did feel like, and I'm not making fun of it, but I did feel like when the camera was doing couples, they were sort of like, all right, we got to have check. Next one, check. Next one, check.
Robot on robot, check. Oh my god.
Now,
by the way,
you guys think
oh, go ahead,
robot,
go ahead.
Oh, Lieutenant Daft Punk.
I love that robot guy, good lady on the bridge. She's awesome.
Hey, augmented human.
Is that what it is?
Not robot. She's an augmented alien. She's not a robot.
What, did she get like a face transplant? I don't understand. Like, how are you augmented and you're all metal?
She's more cyborg than she is.
Interesting. Data. How do we know this? This has not been mentioned in the show, right?
I think the actress has said.
Okay, but it's not been on social media. On the show. I didn't miss.
It's not on screen, but okay. It's like behind the scenes material of what they call her, and like, so the like makeup artist called her augmented human and everything like that.
Because we see what's her name, the helm officer that we see in the dance scene.
Oh, with the thing
with making out. You know, but that's sort of I assume some sort of injury from the Shenzhou.
Right, I think because she didn't have it before the battle of the
binary. No, she didn't. But like, so does that mean like that whole, you know, woman was just like burned to like death and just had to redo everything or?
I don't know.
It's getting a little more Star Warsy than I'm comfortable with, guys. About.
I bet you it was elective.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting if the Federation was not cool eugenics, but totally okay with.
Yeah, that seems
augmentation. It seems whatever. That's a totally different subject for a totally different time.
They do say in the when he's giving the toast, he talks about there's an injured, you know, person right there. Which I didn't know if he was like recovering or if he like actually couldn't walk anymore. Like it wasn't.
I assumed really the second part, but there's no way to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he didn't have the Chris Pike beep beep wheelchair, which I thought would have been. But.
It's zero to beep beep. There's no in between. Yeah.
We can fix everything up until you're at beep beep point, and then that point you're done.
But I mean, I did.
Sorry, going in the beep beep chair.
Well, I did think it was. I mean, I'm not trying to be semi serious, but like. That they're still serving. You know, for instance, you know, in the 21st century, you know, we have, at least in the Army, we have something called the Warrior Transition Brigade, or maybe called something else now. But, you know, when you're wounded and you're recovering, you know, they don't just kick you out. You're still in the Army, blah, blah, blah. But, like, you know, you're generally getting ready to get medically retired or whatever. But presumably, if they're still in the ship, they're still serving, and even though they may be injured. So I thought that was interesting. You know, you just don't, you know, go home, that they can still make you well enough to keep performing in some way.
Now, I'm not a huge TOS person. It's probably the series I know the least of, but what did you guys think of the tie-in of bringing it back around to Stella, to his wife, and apparently we're like right at the Klingon border, like literally they'll be here in minutes if we call them, like 30 minutes or less. They got a pizza probably for the party. But so, yeah,
I have a temporal question, and there may be no answer, but that's why y'all are here. So when existing outside of the time bubble or whatever we're calling it, or reentering the time stream. So, for instance, there's times that we see, you know, during the loopering, that Harry Mudd contacts the Klingons. So now when because he does it like the penultimate time or something like that.
Right.
Remember, like when Michael kills herself. But so, right. Now, when he hails them, is that a hail into the real time universe, or does he have to hail them again the next time? Because it seems as if it's presented as if he hails them, they got it, or maybe they got it. I don't know. And then he thinks that now, oh, they're here again, and he signals them again. You know what I'm trying to say, or does that make sense?
I got the impression that he hailed them, and then the second time, the last time, he had to hail them again because they... I didn't get the impression that it was... And that's a good question. Is the time crystal localized? Is it, you know, are they going to have to reset the ship's chrono after, you know, looping 50 or 60 times in 30-minute increments? Or is it everything is looped as far as our interpretation?
Yeah.
I don't know. It wasn't really specified.
Now, I'm curious whether we see Harry again. I assume the answer is probably yes. I was going to say unfortunately, but that's not true.
I think it is the case. I think they said three episodes, right?
Yeah.
And we've only had two.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought he was... I did enjoy Harry Mudd, and it, for some reason, I feel like an involuntary response to be like, ugh. But no, I really did. I did. Like, I don't know why I'm trying to be like that. He's actually, and this may be a cliche thing, he's actually very Shakespearean.
Oh, he's very dramatic. Oh, yeah.
Yes, but it's not. It all makes sense in what he's doing. Like he's, you know, he's obviously lying the entire time about his love for Stella the Great. You know, but it's not like overdone. Like that character makes sense. That is how he exists. And so it's very interesting. And of course, it all ties down to Costello. And I assume I haven't watched I'm Mud, which is the second TOS episode where he makes the robot of his ex-wife Stella. So.
Yeah, I'm going to be biased towards this version of Mudd no matter what, just because I'm a massive Office fan, and Rainn Wilson can do no wrong in my book, but...
Daniel, he killed many, many people.
Oh, I'm not saying he's a good guy. He's clearly a terrible human being, but I'm just saying I'm a fan of this version of him. Mm-hmm. And he's a good villain. I thought, like you said, he was very like super dramatic. I've come for my revenge, and my insect died, and now I'm going to kill you again and again and again. Which I know, Philip, you had a problem with. But
Now, Tristan, you also had one. So I'm calling you out here. So we had our Lorca death montage.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of that?
I was confused by that. Not by the facts presented, but how the producers and directors wanted us to perceive it. Like, it was a halfway point between dramatic and for laughs. Like, I wasn't sure. I was like, are we supposed to like think it's funny because of all the interesting ways that he found to kill Lorca, and like he was kind of like wriggling around in space at the end? Or was it supposed to be dramatic because we see our captain die that many times? And it's just really strange, because if you plop a different captain in there, like imagine that montage with Picard in it, we would not think it was funny any way, shape, or form.
Janeway
or Sisko or Kirk. But with this one, it was, as I was watching it, I said out loud, I was like, am I supposed to laugh or am I supposed to be angry? I don't know what to feel here. And I'm still not quite sure what we were supposed to feel. That's my main problem.
It's interesting. So I didn't get that sense at all. I don't think the scene was intended to be funny, humorous anyway. Obviously, I think it was a scene. So let me put it in these terms. The best time loop episode of all time on TV was, I think it was a season 3 or season 4 episode of Xena called Been There, Done That.
I was so hoping that you would bring that up, because I was ready for you not to say Xena, and I was going to say, correction, it was Xena.
In one of the loops, if I'm remembering this correctly, and it's been a little while since I've seen this, she it's same thing, time loop. She goes through the day over and over and over again until she gets to whatever she's done. Once she starts getting exasperated, she's done. She's done with the day. She doesn't care. She throws her little blade thing to kill the stupid I can't remember who it was.
Chakram. She killed Joxer with her chakram.
Yes, thank you. I couldn't remember the word chakram either. That was embarrassing. But yeah, because Joxer was the one that comes in, and Joxer's her friend, and he's the one that comes in to wake her up every morning, and she's like, I've had enough with this. And God, I love that scene. It's always stuck out to me in my mind. Anyways.
But I love Gabrielle's reaction. She's like, what? You killed Joxer? What did you... What?
It's awesome.
I will say that the second best non-Star Trek time loop episode, I would say, is Window of Opportunity from Stargate SG-1, Season 4, Episode 6. It's Groundhog's Day funny. It's, you know, you have these two characters and they're looping, and midway they realize, we could do whatever we want because we know it's going to loop. So they start playing golf into the Stargate. They start like riding bikes around and doing whatever they want, and it's just fun. It really is a lot of fun.
Because I think and this is a Philip thing. Listeners, you may have different opinions, and you probably do. At the beginning of this episode, I was all kinds of thrown off. I'm like, there's a disco party because it's named disco. Is this a comedy? Because this is really weird. Everything that's happening now is totally weird. And there's a Gorga Gamunger, and there's I don't know what's going on. But then, of course, there are these, you know, touching character moments, and then there's these. But then, of course, you got Mushroom High Stamets. Oh, it's funny again. And then, no. Mud wants to get, now it's serious. And I guess I was just, and, you know, maybe I just need to be more mature in my watching. You know, it's called dark comedy. It's a genre. Look it up. I know, Philip. But it was just pulling me back a little too much of, like, I don't know where I am right now.
Can I don't know. I didn't get that sense at all. But I do want to talk about one thing that's very related here, and that's Lorca. I always want to talk about Lorca. Lorca is by far the most interesting character to me.
Should he not keep the weapons loaded?
Yeah, he probably shouldn't. And that was a big gun, too. I mean, that's a big pistol he's got there. Anyways, I just wanted to mention, I think this is the first episode that we're not given the is Lorca evil or is Lorca, you know...
You know, that's why it was so boring. That's the only thing I live for anymore.
I liked it because we saw, I feel like in this episode, we saw Lorca as just a captain. And I like, hang on, maybe.
No, I know.
But I just want to get my points out here.
No, I know.
He just felt like a curmudgeonly, angry captain. And, but.
Bud, get off my
ship.
Yeah,
but it felt like a real, you know, he just felt like a regular captain.
His cue.
I wasn't questioning his motives. It was like, you know, he was just like, get off my ship. You know, what the hell are you doing here, Mud? And all this sort of stuff. And I love when he calls up Michael and
Ash.
Ash, thank you. Ash Ketchum. I just got to remember that.
Pokemon.
I know.
I mean, how hard is it?
And you know, they obviously bump into Stamets and the doctor in the hallway, so they're delayed a little bit. And then when they get there, he goes, took you long enough or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, this is like what Lorca would be like in like a day-to-day situation. You're not wondering if he's going to kill the whole crew. He's just an angry dude, and he's just the captain, and I really like that.
No, I just and I'm not disagreeing with you, Daniel, but I just like when you're like, oh, he's a regular captain. I'm like, no, he's a horrible Starfleet captain. He's like, oh, man, friggin' science. I don't give a blank.
I don't care.
It's not his priority, but he went along with it. I love too when they're like
making loud fart noises in dismissal about whatever.
When Michael was like, "Let me take the point on this. I'm the science, you know, officer." He's like, "I don't, whatever, just do it." And then the other guy's like, Ash is like, "I want to be the security dude on this mission." Okay, just get it done. I don't know why we're still talking about the stupid space whale.
He's a little frat boy too. Like whatever, man. I'm not shooting at anything. I'm gonna go back to my Atari games.
I really liked Lorca this episode, because I like the break of the drama of who is Lorca as. Well, there are people. You know, these people on the ship actually look up to him. These people like him. You know,
name me one person who likes Lorca, Daniel.
Michael.
That's okay. You've named one person.
Thank you. I rest my case.
but Daniel, I do have to correct you. Technically, it's not a fish.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Okay. He doesn't care. He doesn't care if it's a fish or not.
Whatever. And also, not to stay on the MAGA langer, but like, it seems a little like a half batch plan. Like, you know, Starfleet regulations say we have to keep it. Like, throw it in the shuttle bay whenever we get to a zoo. Cool. I'm like, you're just gonna keep it in the how do we launch shuttles now? I don't really.
We site to site beam them because that's what we do
with
for
a
anything.
Wave of the hand.
Yes, very flourish, very flourish. Well, any final thoughts on this episode?
You know, I'm curious about Daniel's thoughts about how Mud could take over the computer to do everything he wants that I've never seen it do in my life. But anyway, that's cool. No, again, I'm going to go back. I know I've nitpicked a lot and probably complained a lot. I was going to say it's not my favorite episode, but if I was ranking all the episodes of Discovery so far, this would probably be middle to high. Because it's very enjoyable. You know, it's a time loop. You know, because I'm usually not a fan of episodes that don't count, because obviously most of the 75% of this episode doesn't count. But I do always like a little. It's basically like a heist episode with a little too much killing, but that's fine. I'm putting it aside for a second. But it's like a heist movie, but then you sort of have your Ocean's 11 type ending. And so that's fine. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of a I was going to say it's a fun romp. I don't know. It's a little. It's a deadly romp. But there you go.
On a scale of 1 to 10, would you say it's a 7, maybe?
I would say it's a 7, maybe.
I'm just saying because it's episode 7. Okay, Daniel, your final thoughts on Harry Mudd, man of mischief.
He is. He gets himself into trouble, huh? I liked it. I thought it was a really good episode. I've been tempted in my mind, and I think I'm going to try to train myself not to think this way. And I kind of get annoyed when I hear it, so I don't want to think it. That this is the most Star Trek-y episode of Discovery. I kind of feel that's... It's kind of a weird criticism. All episodes of Star Trek are episodes of Star Trek, so they are all by definition Star Trek-y. This may be a little different than what's come before. I mean, the series in general may be a little different than what's come before. I kind of want to free myself as much as possible from expectations from what we've had before. But this feels very familiar. This episode felt super familiar. I mean, like, literally with cause and effect. Countless time loop episodes in other series that we've seen before. This is nothing super new. But I think it was done very well. And we got a lot of character stuff that that we hadn't seen. And we got a little break from the Klingon stuff for the most part. I liked it. It felt like a bit of a... Oh, yeah, we didn't get any Klingons at all in this episode, huh? So...
What are you talking about? Ash was in this the entire time.
No!
Don't even.
No. They were technically Klingons hailed, but that's about as far as I went.
I'm not convinced that's about true. That. I don't know. I'd have to see what people think about
it. We saw him vaporize, and I didn't see a ridge in the final.
Although Mudd did call them pointy-headed people. Kinda
like... Which is a weird
thing.
I took note of that, too. I feel like that was... That was a kind of a rub in the fans' faces. I think that was...
Yeah, no, it's weird.
That was... Yeah, they're pointy now. They're not ridged foreheads. We're now calling them pointy heads. And you old Star Trek fans can suck it. Like, that's kind of what that felt like to me.
Like Mudd literally the camera was like, yeah.
I do think, as a final thought, I think we should mark this down because this is the first episode in which we saw the Discovery destroyed. And that could come back. Could be a little trope for us. We'll see. I'm not sure how much this series is going to play with time travel, but this was the first.
This was also the first episode since Encounter at Farpoint that did not have an opening teaser.
Very interesting.
Oh.
You're right. It just had the recap, and then it went right into the
previously
teaser.
On Battlestar Galactica.
Ding, 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 ding. Oh, man, I got to rewatch that show.
What are your thoughts? Any final thoughts, Tristan?
I thought this was probably one of the most entertaining episodes that we've seen so far, and I was gonna say it was one of the most Star Trek-y episodes, but whatever. It's cool.
Don't do it! Don't you dare get off this ship.
But it was good. I liked the character building. I liked the time loop. I liked Mudd. I thought that was interesting. And Daniel, I totally get what you're saying about Lorca, about being a captain. Like, he's not a man with issues. He's not a man that's broken inside. He's just a curmudgeon captain, and that's, we're not focusing on his backstory or anything like that. So, like, I totally get what you're saying, and I liked that. I like that we could just, like, put that aside and just focus on plot. There was a few eye rolls that we talked about, and also I wanted to see where Lieutenant Commander Perfect Jaw was in the back of the bridge. I missed him. But it was, to be honest with you, I try to stay positive online. I try to stay positive on Twitter, and I try to stay positive in our own internal communications, but usually I'm a little bit more honest on podcasts. Star Trek Discovery is just okay. I'm not really on fire for Discovery yet, but I'm invested. I'm committed. I'm willing to see it through. And so when I say that this was a good episode and I enjoyed this episode, it's all relative to Discovery itself, if that makes sense.
Well, if you eat this blue marble, Tristan, I think you'll be on fire for this episode.
At least for a second or two, anyways.
I have to say, though, if that was supposed to be the most painful way to die in the universe... Both Ash and Michael seem pretty cool about it.
It was over pretty quickly, too.
It seems silly, but that's okay.
Like, the Klingon disruptor death seemed way more
harsh. In the most toys, TNG.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. A Verdion T disruptor. Yeah. Very painful way to go. So, well, yeah, my final thoughts. It was a fun episode. I don't think it was quite as fun as I was expecting. And I mean, there was... I can't remember if... I think it was... around three quarters through, or maybe it's at the very end, but there was like a kind of rompy Star Trek music cue.
It was a TNG one. That was like,
yeah. Was it at the very end when they're just and they're like, everything's great now, ba ba da ba ba, you know? And yeah, and I'm like, that's new for Star Trek Discovery. Like, that hasn't been done.
They all stop walking down the hallway, going, "Did you hear that?"
Yeah,
we don't normally have
freeze frame.
We don't normally have concerts here.
Well, the ending. I mean, I know. I don't want to, you know, just real quick. The ending felt very classic TOS-y, didn't it? In a lot of ways, it was just like, yeah, it kind of felt like,
we got that mud.
We got you. You okay? Now go. You have to deal with your wife.
Hope you don't get accused of murder, Scotty. That's what are we laughing?
He'll be no magic at all.
It felt very classic like that.
Just imagine Kirk like slapping someone with his clipboard, like,
ow,
scamp.
But yeah, no, it was fun. I think Mudd was done well. That, you know, just that type of character where he's very dramatic, very Shakespearean, and very taking over the ship. Apparently, is very easy. No fingerprint identification or any sort of command level codes or. But yeah, I mean, I said it in the very beginning. I think. The ease at which they enact their let's get him plan, everyone's really on board really fast, especially Lorca, which he kind of seems to question anytime a plan is not his. But
Stamets got a secret from everyone on the bridge crew.
There we go. His secret was what the triangle and line are on his back.
Oh. I think it was the Christmas gift he didn't get. I'm growing up, and he's like, "Oh, that's why."
Oh,
yeah. I want to know Robot Lady's secret.
But I did like how
Maybelline.
You know, Stamets is trying to get Michael to trust him, and I'm like, okay, of all the characters for him to kind of like spout off and say like, "This is a time travel crazy thing," like I could actually see her logically being like, "Okay, yes, it's out there, but what you're saying does make sense," although. Well, Philip, what are we going to be discussing next week? What far-flung reaches?
Let me look out this. I have this old book from high school. I just have to translate the title here. It's Si Vis Pacem Para Bellum. I don't know. If you want peace, prepare for war. What do you want? It's interesting from the previews. You know, got some Saru. At least it's tinting some Saru heaviness to it, emphasis to it. We're on a planet, so get some more, you know, because this was obviously a bottle episode, which may or may not have been mentioned on some podcast on this network. I think it'll be interesting to get outside, stretch our legs, shoot some Klingons, all that stuff.
That's right. So, Philip, where could we find you if we wanted to talk about your terrible Latin?
Well, you can't find me in the party room, that's for sure. Because my wife is already in bed at that time, and I'm up late watching Netflix. So you can find me at the Twitter handle at NC Public Servant.
And Tristan, where can people find you, both online and on this network?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at The Insane Robin, and you can also find me on two other shows, one that I mentioned before, Punch It, Writing in Star Trek, which I host with Charlene Schmidt. And you can find me on Nerd Nuptial, which is another show that I host on the network, which I host with my wife. And it's a show about our married life through a nerdy lens. And so everybody should check it out. Because they're both a lot of fun to do.
And Daniel, where could someone find you if they wanted to talk about Save the Space Whales?
So, unlike Philip, you can find me in the party room. I don't drink beer and I'm terrible at Pong, but I still like beer Pong. You can find me also on Twitter at OneUpDan. That is the number one, as in number one beer Pong champ. Not really. Not the word.
Now, Daniel, do we get to ask what kind of phase you're going through right now?
Right now, I'm in my doctor phase, but okay. I'm coming up on the tail end of that. So maybe I'm moving to my veterinary phase at this point.
Okay, makes sense.
Veterinary, the sub breakdowns of the doctor phase.
As long as you're wearing white.
Well, if someone wanted to find me online, they could go on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi or Instagram as well, or visit my website drsci-fi.com where I post. But other geeky things, Star Wars, Star Trek, it's a lot of fun. I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And I'm Tristan Riddell.
Stranded here on City Alpha 3.